Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Nobody does it better. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome, welcome, welcome once again to Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard. Around the table today, John Shannon, our good friend. There's the Yager-esque salute if you're watching on TV. And Scott Morrison, our good man who I've spent the last couple of weeks
bonding.
With.
Called bonding. Bonded.
Yeah, Scott and I have bonded over the past week and a half, I suppose, 2 weeks here, doing hits into Sportsnet Central. Good afternoon, gentlemen. We'll review the weekend that was around the Stanley Cup playoffs. Also, Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Calgary Flames, will be aboard. But, as they say in the movies, about last night, it was the Carey Price Show as the Habs ended the Senators' miracle run. 2-0 shutout, 43 saves for Carey Price, and was rewarded with the silent treatment in the dressing room afterwards by his Montreal Canadian players. And that's it for the Ottawa Senators. The Habs move on. To which John Shannon says what?
Actually, I got to give Nick Kiprios some credit. I don't normally do that. Nick, we were talking on Friday, and Nick said, you know, maybe the only way Montreal is going to win this series is if they win 1-0 because they can't seem to score. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. Carey Price was his, you know, typical Carey Price self, although there was a bit of scramble in Carey Price at the end of the game.
A little bit.
But in the end, moral victories for Ottawa. When you consider how many points they were down late in the season, it was as good as it probably could be expected. Although, I mean, when you look at the series, the two overtime games, Montreal was good and was a better team in two games. Ottawa was better in two games. It was a lot closer to a pick 'em series than I think people realized.
Scotty, they climbed up a 14-point mountain to get there. We thought, okay, well, that might be it for the Ottawa Senators. That's their Stanley Cup. They've reached the top of the mountain just getting to the playoffs. Were you as surprised as, well, many were, how competitive they were against the Habs?
Well, to John's point, I think going in, a lot of people didn't see it as being necessarily as close. Certainly the way the teams played down the stretch, it looked like a close series. But I think a lot of people wondered whether Cinderella was out of gas and midnight was right around the corner when they started that series. But they were close, and that Ottawa team, resilient, like so many others we've seen, and insert Calgary here, the teams that refuse to go away. So give them a lot of credit. I mean, it's not the happy ending they wanted, but they did not embarrass themselves by any stretch of the imagination.
And if you look back at a year ago, what the Senators were going through at the end of the season by missing the playoffs and this team, I think a lot of people were saying, well, what's the future in Edmonton? Where are the young guys going to come from?
Ottawa.
Yeah.
They're asking that at Edmonton, too.
Yeah, don't worry.
Ottawa.
A big glimpse of it last night in the Erie St. Marie game. Yeah.
And I do think there's a lot more, quote-unquote, hope in Ottawa now based on those young guys and what they've done for this team. And they actually have some tough decisions to make in goal, what's going to happen there. Or maybe it's not that tough. But there are some quality building blocks for Brian Murray and Cyril Leader and Eugene Melnyk to work with.
Is that the best story in hockey this year? The Ottawa Senators making the playoffs. Was that the best hockey? Let me sharpen the pencil a little more. Was that the best?
You're holding a pen, by the way, saying.
I'm not going to stop asking.
Don't flip
to give me the
whatever
answer
you,
that I
whatever
want.
You don't flip it.
That's dangerous.
Is that the best hockey team story of the year?
No. Sorry.
What was?
Calgary.
Better than the Ottawa story?
Oh, I start to finish story.
We were writing them off. At least Calgary hung in there the entire season.
But Calgary was supposed to be a lottery pick. Calgary was supposed to, I mean, we're going to have Brad on later.
Yeah.
I mean, there were, before the season started, Calgary was saying, well, you know, if we get in the top five, we might have a chance of somebody good. You know, that was the discussion point in Calgary.
There was at least six or seven times during the season, and we did a lot of their games, that people asked the question, is it over now? Is this the time? And it started from the first week and a half of the season when they went on the road, and everybody said, okay, here's the bottom going to fall out now.
And then they lose their best player in New
Jersey. They lost eight in a row at one point.
They lose their best player in New Jersey. And you think, okay, there it is. Yeah. I mean, 21 games to go. Mark Giordano's done. The bubbles burst.
They had the Breyer road trip.
Oh, yeah.
That was going to take them down. Right. Not so much.
So ask your question again.
Well, okay. And here, okay, let's drill down even further then.
Sharpen that pencil.
All right, sharpening the pencil even more. I'm going to stab someone with it in a second.
yourself, probably.
Perhaps. I've got two eyes. I only need one. The Calgary Flames were always competitive. Like, sure, there was the expectation you managed at the beginning of the season and throughout as well, but they were always a competitive team. Remove Mark Giordano, that's fine. They're the Black Knight and Monty Python. They'll just keep on going. They were always competitive. We talk about it being, okay, now it's over for the Calgary Flames. It was over for the Ottawa Senators. They were done. They were a write-off. The question was, can they fall far enough to get in the top three for the draft?
Well, do we have to measure which number one, who's number two? It's right there, right tied for the lead. How's that?
I'm not budging, Scotty. I'm not giving them anyway.
14
it's
points
Monday.
Out,
I'm hankering
having
for
to
fight.
Win right down to the wire the final day,
yeah.
And they pulled it out and with that win in Philadelphia on the Saturday afternoon. So it's a marvelous story, an amazing story. And to do it with a third-string goaltender who might have been your fourth or fifth string, who knows, going into that season, it was an amazing.
When you consider that seven teams in this league are in Canada, the story in Ottawa, the story in Winnipeg, the story in Calgary, and maybe even to a lesser extent, the story in Vancouver, four of the best stories of the National Hockey League season, you combine that with what went on in Minnesota in the second half.
Yep.
They might be the best, and maybe Florida, but Florida didn't make the playoffs. I mean, of the top seven or eight stories, four or five of them were in Canada.
Well, you could add Carey Price to that mix.
Well, yeah.
I think of him winning, he's going to win the Hart Trophy and as well as being the best goalie in the league. So the Canadians as a team maybe weren't the success story, if you will, the surprising story, but Carey Price putting up the numbers he did was incredible.
Now, Montreal faces off against the winner of the Tampa Bay-Detroit series, and hey, look who's turned the pot. It's John Cooper saying the Detroit Red Wings interfere better than anyone in the NHL. See, that's not exactly a secret, I don't think, to anybody, and it might be passive, but nobody plays as close to the body and walks that fine line of interference, you know, accidentally deliberate, John. You're smiling because you know what
I'm
talking
about. Well, because
I've heard... No one does that better than
the Detroit Red Wings.
You have to admit that.
Every team other than the Red Wings you talk to, you hear about the Red Wings get away with murder. The Red Wings do this. The Red Wings have more pick plays. The Red Wings, there's more touchy-feely plays with the Detroit Red Wings than anybody else in the league constantly.
Mm-hmm.
They play to the line once in a while or over, and according to 2,900 managers and coaches, they never get called.
They play it perfectly.
Yes.
They pluck interference like a fiddle. And it is a sonata of the writing. It is brilliant the way they do it. It's subtle, but if you're playing against it, it's obvious. Oh. And we went into the series saying, hey, there's no way Detroit's going to be able to handle Tampa's speed. Guess again. And they're getting goaltending.
I didn't think they could handle the speed. And quite honestly, have we seen much of Tampa's speed?
I was going to say at times Detroit's been
four.
A quicker team.
Game four, we saw the speed.
Game four for 5 minutes.
Yes.
I mean,
when Tyler Johnson woke up after getting run.
Yeah. I mean, Glendening doesn't do the hit, doesn't cut his hand, isn't out of the game. I mean, this series might be over by now when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, Tampa has not used its speed to its fullest at all this series.
Now, is it
the power play. So
given
more penalties, but they're not cashing in on the power play. Yeah. And it's a mystery to some degree of just how, you know, we've talked about it at various nights. Sometimes Stamkos is the go-to guy. Other times he's the setup guy. And nothing's working.
Saturday we saw him fire it.
I was going to say.
Saturday we saw him fire it. So it's not shoulder.
No, from his regular position, from that position on the off wing, you saw him finally shoot the puck. But
why so long?
I don't know. That's
And why did teammates look so hesitant to pass the puck to him in that one-timer situation? Until the evening 2 nights ago.
Unfortunately, if there is something wrong, we're going to hear when the series is over, when they're eliminated, if they're eliminated, what's right or what's wrong. And perhaps John is just out coaching himself at times. Perhaps John is just trying to overthink.
Felt they were too predictable and tried to
Mike
do
Babcock
something different.
Mike Babcock on the other bench, who, you know, is, you know, arguably the best coach in the game right now, and perhaps John's trying to out-coach him. And rather than playing to his strength, which obviously we all agree is their speed. I think we have seen some quality guys. I mean, we understand what a great player Victor Hedman is now. Holy smokes, has he been good for them? But at the same time, you have to wonder, are we really seeing how much of a Tampa Bay Lightning hockey are we really seeing? I don't think we've seen very much of it.
Well, I think the other factor, and we talked about it, Jeff, the other night, is that Ben Bishop's been, Randy Carlyle line, just okay in some of those games. And the other night, he had the short side one timer on the power play. Tough one, but still, when you see short side, you always think it should be stopped. And then he gave up the big rebound on the second goal. You know, it's not to say that he's not doing good things, but there's been a couple that you think, want that one back. And even, between the five hole, the Glendening one, the spinorama, and the opening game.
Yeah.
Well, and we should, mention too, Peter Mrazek. I mean, Tampa's only been shut out three times all season long.
All three, isn't it?
By Peter Mrazek.
Yeah.
All three times. For some reason, he just has, or seems to have, Tampa's number.
Well, he stole the first game. There's no question. Yep. Detroit only had 14 shots and managed to come out with the victory. And then he's just been rock solid since. And I give, you mentioned Babcock and that coaching staff and that team credit because they're playing a great team defense in front of them.
Want to talk about the Penguins?
Okay.
Sure.
Sidney Crosby's off the World Championships because the Penguins are out in five against the Rangers.
Well, good for Sid to go.
Sure.
I think he'd rather be playing
in the next round.
I was told if you can't say something nice,
last time he was at this tournament, him and Brad Boyce lit it on fire. Yeah. And that was fantastic to the point where he lobbied for a couple years to get Brad Boyce out of St. Louis into the Pittsburgh Penguins organization. What happens in Pittsburgh now?
Apparently not much.
That shocked me.
Well,
everyone down before we sharpen the guillotine?
To me, it happens so quickly. Like, nothing's going to happen. Because I do, and perhaps you're right. The whole concept of trying to identify what was right or what was wrong, and on our network, on other networks, describing what was supposed to happen in Pittsburgh when the team was eliminated and Malkin hadn't had a goal in 15 games, a point in 10, and things had to happen quickly. Just they did stop the bleeding, they did quell the storm, but at the same time, I mean, this team is far from perfect, and when you consider what the Eastern Conference is going to be like next year, Florida is going to be better.
Yes.
Columbus is going to be better.
Oh, yes.
They're going to be in tough for the playoffs if they maintain this level. And no first pick.
They gave that up in the David Perron trade with Klinkhammer. Here's the question. Can Jim Rutherford sell to ownership? A, we lost to a team that went to the Stanley Cup final last year, the top team, President's Trophy winner in the NHL. Plus, we had no Letang, no Erhoff, no Mata. Right. No Pouliot, our back end was a dog's breakfast.
And Malkin was hurt.
And no Christian Erhoff. Like, can he sell that?
Well, there is some validity to the defense.
100%.
Yeah, there is some validity.
Injuries aren't an excuse, but sometimes they're a reason, the old cliche. And sometimes that rings true. And I think it was a huge factor for Pittsburgh. And they were close in that series. I mean, a bounce there's here, a bounce
one goal
there.
Games, yeah, Scotty. Is there exactly. One goal games?
But really, were they? Honestly, were they?
The scoreboard may have been kind to a few on a few of those examples, but when you consider,
but there were nights when Lundqvist had to be real good.
Yes, true. Two of the games. You're right. Yeah, yeah.
And that's not to say they don't have holes, and the injuries were part of the holes. Their roster still has holes. Their top six forwards are really top four when you nail it down.
Yep.
You should put Pascal Dupuis on your list too.
100%. Great one, John. Absolutely.
He's one of those guys that he seems to be a real catalyst for that team on so many different levels of what he can do offensively and defensively, and he and Sid at a time. The interesting thing, and it came through a lot on the broadcast, both on the U.S. side and the Canadian side, was where Chris Kunitz is in all this. Has he lost a step?
Yeah, he was very quiet. And
yeah.
A lot of times.
Yeah, and so all of a sudden, if it's Kunitz and Crosby and whoever you put on the other side, let's face it, have they given Crosby enough support? And that's a question I think ownership, you don't have to, and it's Mario Lemieux, so he knows the game, but you don't have to be a true hockey guy to say, are we doing everything to make Sidney Crosby the Sidney Crosby he should be? Because Crosby, I thought, was really good in the series and gave everything that he could, but you know, nobody could finish.
Well, Daniel Winnick, who I think is a terrific player, but a terrific third-line player, was on his wing for large parts of that series.
Yeah.
So that speaks to what you're saying, John, about, and what I had mentioned, that your top six is really a top four in terms of how you break down that personnel and how they perform.
And then Mike Johnson's inability or to think that putting Malkin and Crosby together, if you combine that with the fact that this team, you know, is shorthanded more often than any other team in the regular season, and Sid doesn't kill penalties.
Yeah.
You know, heck, in Vancouver, you saw Daniel and Henrik start to kill penalties at key times.
Yeah. He started to do the tail end of penalty kills
as the series
wore on.
But not very much, though.
No, not a lot of time.
You know, and that's, to me, if you have, and you know darn well, Sid would have tried to play 60 minutes if he could.
But if you're ownership, you've blown it up once. Do you do it? Does this become an annual? If you don't win, you just keep firing them out the door?
Or at some point,
you say, we've hired quality people, we ride this thing through.
Or is this the Band-Aid right now, these two seasons, with all due respect to Jim Rutherford and Mike Johnson? Are these the Band-Aid years until they figure out really what to do next? And to the point about Crosby and Malkin, I mean, in a lot of ways, that can only do the Penguins good when you consider how good Brandon Sutter was.
And Brandon Sutter was good.
You know what? You say to yourself, third line center. But hold on a second. With that skill set and those wheels, all of a sudden you put Malkin and Crosby together, Brandon Sutter jumps up to the second line.
Yeah. Well, Brandon Sutter makes the Jordan Staal trade look pretty good now.
100%.
When you consider money that's put in
and
position.
Production.
And production. You know, who made that trade?
Jim Rutherford.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. Okay, meanwhile, in the Western Conference, it is the Chicago Blackhawks who will face off against the Minnesota Wild. Despite the fact that Scott Darling did not finish the series, it was indeed Corey Crawford. Chicago knocks off the Nashville Predators. A surprise or no?
Shouldn't be. Shouldn't be a surprise. As Chicago to me, has every weapon in the book. Minnesota to me, second half of the season, I mean, they were the best team in hockey.
They're hard to play against, John. Whew. They are so hard to play against.
You know, and the guys that aren't getting enough credit beyond Ryan Suter, because he's the big money guy. I mean, Brodin's a solid player. Scandella and Spurgeon are playing
excellent together.
You know,
then you have the kid and the vet, and Matt Dumba and Jordan Leopold.
And Matt Dumba, we did see Dumba play enough this year against Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver to know that, wow, has he grown leaps and bounds in the last 12 months as a player?
And we're just watching for on the TV side, the Hawks there, and you look at that reel and you wonder, was it a surprise they got through? Keith,
no.
Seabrook, Toews, Hossa, Sharp, Kane, all producers.
But that can all be erased if you flip the pencil on the other side by bad goaltending. Right?
And goaltending's a factor.
And we saw the flip-flop.
The most important factor.
Corey Crawford get the hook, and then we saw Scott Darling get the hook, all within one series. Goalie drama from the beginning of the series to the end.
I don't think, and it's funny, after the series is over, I don't think there's any drama at all.
It's Corey Crawford's net.
Corey Crawford is back where he should be, and he'll have enough time and enough practice time, rather, to sit and worry about what goes on against the Minnesota Wild. It's not going to be a high-scoring series against Minnesota, I don't think, and one would think that, they'll have a pretty good plan of attack against the Wild forwards.
What do we make of the Vancouver Canucks? We'll talk to Brad Treliving here, GM of the Calgary Flames, in a couple of moments on Hockey Central at noon. But the losing team goes home. That is the Vancouver Canucks. Going in, we thought, okay, I mean, we've all said this all season long, this is it for the Calgary Flames. Their run has come to an end. I've stopped saying it myself completely. I'll stop saying it even against the Anaheim Ducks. But where are we with the Canucks after this? And a lot of people thought, myself included, the veterans on Vancouver, in the end, would outdo the kids that are too young to know any better than to keep winning.
Well, Brad Fay had sent me a note to remind me about this, so I'm going to tote my own horn on this one.
Yes.
It's that we'd talked about Vancouver having more playoff experience on their roster going into it, but there was also a Stanley Cup winner behind the Calgary bench. And I think Bob Hartley is coach of the year. And I think Bob Hartley did a lot of good things in that series. And they won when their big line wasn't their big line. They won when they had to change goalies.
Yeah.
And they've won without their star defenseman. So I think that was a factor that was maybe underrated a little bit too.
how to manage a 3-0 lead is something I think that you'd love to.
Oh, it's the worst lead in hockey, John.
Used to be 2. Remember when we were kids, Scotty? Yeah. It was 2.
The worst leads are the ones you blow.
Yeah. at 3-0, full control, and yet that silly little play that allowed Michael Ferland to score the 3-1 goal changed the whole perspective. You could feel 100%. It. I mean, we're 2,500 miles away. You could feel the whole atmosphere, the whole tenor of the game change.
But it shouldn't when you have veterans like that on Vancouver, though.
Yeah.
You can understand that against a young team. That's where I have a problem with all of this. If it's a young team, I'm buying what you're saying 100%.
People are going to say in Vancouver, and I think Benning and Desjardins have done a really good job when you consider how they had to rebuild a franchise quickly. And with some of the same parts, to reinvent people, to give them confidence, to build them up. But I just wonder about some of the defensemen. I don't like picking on players very often. That's because I have never played the game. But Alex Edler did nothing for me, particularly in the games in Calgary. And you have to wonder, behind closed doors, what Benning and Desjardins and even Trevor Linden are saying, okay, when we continue to work with this club, do we have the right chemistry on our blue line? We obviously like Chris Tanev. We signed him long-term.
Dan Hamhuis.
But does Alex Edler fit into this? And I think that's a key question in all this. It's not, 82-game season, Alex Edler was very good. But, man, oh, man, I thought he made some drastic errors at key times in this series.
Do you have any problem with Ryan Miller? And I know he's fighting through the injury. He's got the knee injury, and we thought that would produce. I was talking to a goaltender friend of mine on the weekend, I said we thought we would see a quieter Ryan Miller, a not as aggressive. The knee injury would force him to be a more conservative goaltender. We didn't see that on Saturday. We saw the Ryan Miller as competitive and challenging and wandering and coming out and falling back on what's made him successful before against relying on, well, you know what? I got the bad wheel. I'm going to play a little bit more conservatively. Can we pin any of this on the goaltending between Lack and Miller?
Well, I mean, without Eddie Lack, they don't get there.
Right.
I mean, you can't forget that body of work that was very impressive when Miller was injured. One thing I was going to say is that for whatever reasons, we see more and more, and we saw it again in that Nashville series, big leads aren't necessarily a sure thing anymore in the National Hockey. You see it all through the regular season, 2- and 3-goal leads that disappear routinely. And I don't know the reason for that other than, just maybe it comes down to the parity that nothing is safe because teams are that close together.
Well,
and getting the save when you need it, too. To close the door when the momentum switches, as you mentioned, John.
See, this is where I think where you cannot take your foot off the pedal ever.
Yeah.
You know, you can't relax in 60 minutes ever. And I do think that Bob Hartley, because it does do that really well. You know, every shift is important. That's not to say other coaches don't try to do it and other players don't do it. The Rangers got away with it because I don't think the Rangers played very well for 5 games. I mean, that's 15 periods. You know, did they play 5 or 6 good periods of hockey? But when they sat back, I mean, they still had Henrik Lundqvist to make a difference.
And a great defense. And
a really good defense when you think of what Staal and Girardi and McDonough can do for you. Whereas when Vancouver took that step back, I mean, and Calgary just started to come. I mean, they had nothing for it. And I don't blame the goaltending in Vancouver. I think the goaltending was okay. But I think their team defense at times, when Calgary got on their high horse, it was hard to stop. And that's where I think you need some solid defenders that could make a bigger difference.
A couple thoughts on the Calgary Flames. And Brad Treliving, GM of the organization, will join us here in a couple of moments on Hockey Central at noon. I don't know about you guys. I suspect your answer is the same. Boy, was I happy to see Matt Stajan score that goal. When you look at everything that Matt Stajan has gone through on the ice, off the ice, specifically to see Matt Stajan as the hero in the closeout game against the Vancouver Canucks on Saturday night on Hockey Night in Canada. One of the great moments of this year in hockey for me.
Well, you always want to see good guys do good, great things, and he's one of the good guys in the game and always has been through a lot of tough times, as you've mentioned, on and off the ice. And he's been a battler, and he was rewarded, and it was nice to see.
You know, I'll be honest, I never, when the original trade was made, when he was part of the group that went to Calgary from Toronto for Dion Phaneuf, I thought Brian Burke had done a magnificent job of getting rid of people that weren't going to be long-term players in the National Hockey League. And I never thought Matt Stajan could be this good.
And be a quality role player.
That's right. You're bang on.
There were so many times you and I were doing regional Calgary Flames games where we would see Matt Stajan first-line center and fourth-line center and everywhere in between as well and do whatever was asked of him. Like when you talk about foot soldiers
himself.
And guys that wear boots to work, Matt Stajan.
Yeah, and you have to wonder, where did that come from? I mean, off the ice, obviously, when we're talking about family issues that are heartbreaking, and he was quite public about it. That was the other thing. A lot of people were private about it. He met it. He and his family met it, full on. But the fact that it was him, a veteran guy, scoring a key goal amongst the kids. To me, you're right. It was actually one of those nights where, even though you're not cheering for either team to win or to lose, it was a good emotional position. And you could see it on the bench, too.
Oh,
you could see it on the Flame
away.
Bench. Yeah, no, yeah. And that's where you measure. I mean, you've been around the game. When you when you see popular players in the room score, how that really does really energize the bench.
I'm with you. I don't cheer for teams. I've said it before. You guys are probably the same. I don't cheer for teams. I cheer for individuals. I cheer for the nameplate more than the crest,
which is
backwards for sports, but nonetheless, good for Matt Stajan and good for the Calgary Flames. On that, we'll hit a break on Hockey Central at noon. Come back with Brad Treliving, general manager of the Calgary Flames. You're listening along the Sportsnet Radio Network, watching on Sportsnet Television, simulcast on the NHL Network stateside.
That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard, John Shannon, and Scott Morrison around the table. Brad Treliving, who is the general manager of the Calgary Flames, will be aboard in a couple of moments. In the meantime, some janitorial work to catch up on from last Friday.
Oh.
And Brad's family knows a thing or two about this next little sponsor plug.
You better.
We are finger cooking lunch today, John.
No, we
Shannon
did. We did
Scott.
Finger
oh, sorry.
Cook.
We finger cooked lunch today. No,
oh,
Friday.
Friday.
There we go. We finger cooked lunch Friday. We ordered online at bostonpizza.com. Over 100 delivery items to choose from at Boston Pizza.
Did you enjoy your salad?
I wasn't here for it. I was watching the program on the Magic Eyeball, as Scott Morrison calls it, as otherwise known as the television. Mm.
The food was excellent.
And there we go.
I was here.
Brad Treliving is going to join us in a couple of moments. Want to mention as well, Big Game 7 coming up tonight, Shades of 1987. It is Mason. It is Rudy. It is LaFontaine.
Yeah.
The Easter Epic. God, what a game that was. No, it is the Islanders and the Washington Capitals. We'll tee that one up.
And that one ended four overtimes at roughly 2 in the morning Eastern time.
Yeah, let's try to get it done a little more economically tonight, boys. Brad Treliving joins us, GM of the Calgary Flames. Brad, good afternoon. Thanks for being aboard and congratulations.
Thanks very much. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing well. You know, at the beginning of the season, Brad, I felt bad for you when everyone was predicting that Calgary was going to be in the McDavid sweepstakes. I felt bad for you around trade deadline when you made the announcement that Mark Giordano wouldn't be available anymore for your organization. But now that you've beaten the Vancouver Canucks, advanced into the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, Brad, I don't feel sorry for you anymore.
Well, you're right. Going back to September there probably wasn't a lot of people expecting much out of this team. And I think it's really the credit goes to the players and the coaches, quite frankly, in terms of building a belief system. And I think, listen, there's lots of things that we need to improve upon, but belief is a real powerful thing. And you've seen it throughout the year and throughout this series against a really good Vancouver team. And, you know, our guys, they have a belief. They have a belief in themselves. They have a belief in one another, and that's got us to this point.
Brad, you know, we were in Penticton at rookie camp, and all eyes were on Sam Bennett. All eyes were on Johnny Goodrow. Not many eyes on Michael Ferland. Could you have thought that those three kids would be on your roster in late April and making a difference?
Especially early on, you guys know what it's like with young players. It's everybody develops at a different timeline. I really, coming in here, I was real adamant that we weren't going to rush people into jobs here, or rush people into the league. You know, each has had a sort of a different path. You know, you know, Johnny's season's been well chronicled. We all knew he had special skill. It was going to be a matter of how long it was going to take to transition from the college game to the pro game and all those types of things. Sam was, you know, he had a great camp. I mean, he was sour at me because I told him right all along that, you know, it's a tough league for any young player, especially 18-year-olds. Obviously, he had the shoulder injury, you know, had surgery, came back. But to have an impact that he's had in the playoffs, I don't think anybody could have predicted that. And then Michael's a real interesting guy. You know, Michael, you know, even going back to junior, this guy's got a unique skill set. He had a good camp for us. At times was dominant in the American League, had a real dominant start, and then, you know, plateaued out. But he more than anybody, we talked to the group about, you know, the regular season's when you get paid, but you can make a name for yourself and build a reputation in the playoffs, and I think he started to do that in the first round.
Brad, we talked about it a little bit earlier in the show, but whoever scored the winning goal was going to be loved and going to be a hero. But how special or more special was it that it was Matt Stajan?
Yeah, that's a real good point, Scott. Like, he's, you know, a lot of our younger players get talked a lot about here over the course of the season and even into the first round. I don't think our veteran players get the credit that they deserve. And Matt Stajan, in particular, he's been such a leader for us. You know, he's one of the guys we turn to when we go through some adversity to calm our group down. I mean, I always kind of whisper in his ear of just making sure the guys are ready and keeping an even keel with things. And then, you know, so he's played a really important role for us in that regard. And then, you know, everything that him and his wife have dealt with over the last year, it was fitting. To me, it was fitting. It was deserving, but it was fitting that he would score that goal, and we're, you know, obviously real happy for him.
No, the other part of this is that, and you and I have talked about this through the season, is that Bob Hartley seems to have done an amazing job picking the right goaltender at the right time. Mm. And mm-hmm. guys go on streaks, whether it was Ramo or Hiller or even Yoni Ortio at a point. So you have to be truthful now. Is it by Ouija board? or how does he decide which goalie to go with for a certain... I mean, and every time he says, I just pick my... It's my gut. I go with my gut. But he's been able to pick the right goalie most of the season and to make the change at the right time, too.
Yeah, no question. I mean, coming into the year, we said we really felt one of the strengths we were going to have is goaltending. And, you know, people that follow the team last year saw that the end of the year that Kari had, and then bringing Jonas in, who's a veteran player, who's been through, you know, the grind in the Western Conference, has been through playoff rounds. And then even Yoni Ortio has come up and given us some, you know, at a critical time in our season, Yoni Ortio was excellent for us. So, yeah, that's Bob's done a really good job, and Jordan Sigalet, our goaltending coach, in terms of preparing the guys. You know, it was interesting in the game the other night because Bob stated after, I think, you know, listen, Jonas was outstanding for us all series, and to me was the key for us winning that series. And you know, Bob mentioned after this wasn't the case in Game 6 of Jonas being bad. I think it was a funny start. We actually really liked our start. It was one of the better starts we had in the series, and all of a sudden we looked up, we're down 3-0 or 2-0, and so I think it changed momentum to just try to give a little bit of a shock, a different look, and you know, the other part of that is Carey came in and played really well, and made some big saves. So, yeah, we count on everybody, and that goes from goaltending on out.
Brad, once upon a time, if you saw the second goalie, so number two goalie, so-called number two, in a series, it meant bad things. But now with your team, and we've seen it with other teams in the postseason, two goalies being the norm and both playing well. Is there a different mindset now for coaches and teams?
It's funny you bring it up because we were actually talking about it the other day. I mean, you go through all the series, and I think there's only a couple that I mean, it's funny. Both teams that clinched the night we clinched, us in Chicago, both teams played, you know, both teams had two goalies in the net that night. So I don't know what the answer is, guys. I do think, you know, the grind of a season, you know, the old days of saying one guy's playing 75, you know, I think you need two goaltenders now. And, you know, in our particular situation, and Bob stated all year, it's not, you know, listen, we've leaned on Jonas a large portion of the year, but Kari's come in and given us really good stretches. I just think you see it now where, you know, as much as you need four lines and six defensemen, you need two goaltenders. And, you know, the travel, the scheduling, I mean, it can be a grind. And so physically, mentally, I think it allows you to be fresher in the position, if you will. You know, that's sort of my take on it. I don't necessarily know why, but you go throughout the league and I almost that mentality of it's, you know, you're not just going to lean on one guy. If something goes wrong, or if a guy's having a tough night, or if you need to change momentum, people have moved to another goaltender quicker probably than years past. But I think it's also a show that there's depth of the position throughout the league. You know, the old days of saying the backup, you know, there's a backup and he's not going to see the ice for 2 months. In today's game, I just don't know if you can do that. You know, you need depth, and you know, that counts for your whole lineup, and we're seeing it now even at the goaltender position.
Brad Treliving joins us. Flames general manager, they're off to face off against the Anaheim Ducks in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I don't know that Jiří Hudler ever has another 75-point season, Brad, but I do know this. When players struggled on your Flames squad this year, it seemed as if Hudler had the Midas touch, and anyone that played around him instantly got better. A thought or two on his performance this year.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. I think he's a really underappreciated player throughout the league. Obviously not in our locker room. You know, he's a guy, when you look at our team, he's one of the guys that's, you know, we talk about experience. He's been through this in Detroit. You know, he's been through the grind of the playoffs. The thing with Jiří is, you know, he's a very skilled guy. He's a really intelligent guy. He's quietly a very, very competitive player. And, you know, you've seen it, you know, it gets talked about with the two young guys, with Sean and Johnny playing with them. But, you know, there's a support there that he gives them, but there's also a, you know, there's a demand for performance, and he pushes people. And, you know, he's been obviously a really important player for us, you know, production-wise and statistically and what he's brought, but he's a real quiet leader for us. You know, like I said, he's a real pro. The work that he puts in off the ice, he looks after himself in terms of, you know, in the gym, but he pushes people to get to a different level. And we've seen it there with, you know, we talk about the younger players, and, you know, the nights that maybe it hasn't gone the way they've wanted to go, he's supportive, but then there's also a drive to say, okay, guys, we need more. And you can't, especially at this time of the year, you can't underappreciate what, you know, we don't have a lot of experience of going through these things. Jiří's the one, you know, one of the guys that we have that we lean on to, you know, just even talking to him after game five of you know, the need now just to put everything in the past, and each game is its own animal, and you can't get too high or too low. He's been able to do that, not only on the ice, but you know, off the ice in terms of preparing the guys for each and every game. So he's been really important for us. And I, like I said, from a pure playing standpoint, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. This guy's he's got a special skill set, real special skill set.
How do you match up against Anaheim?
Oh boy. I don't know. I mean, they're listen. There's a reason they were the top team in the Western Conference, and you know they've got experience. You look at through the center of the ice. You know, probably the big difference this year from last year is adding Kessler, and you've got Getzlaff and Kessler. So, listen, we know we've got our hands full here. It's a deep team. You know, their skill, size, there's no weaknesses on the team. So, you know, we'll devise a game plan here to come out and do what we can do. But, you know, no question we're going to be the underdogs in this series, which has sort of been the way we've been all year. But we know what we're up against. Listen, this is a really, really good team. And we're going to have to be at our best to give ourselves a chance. But we know we've got a very formidable opponent.
I think being the underdog fits Bob Hartley very well. Thank you very much. Brad, thanks so much for stopping by.
Yes. Thursday or Friday, Brad?
I don't know. I thought you guys are the TV guy. You guys have all the answers.
Yeah, don't we call the shots here, John?
Okay, you're starting Thursday.
Let us know your preference. We'll put in a good word.
Later the better.
All right, well, I'll get right on that. Thanks, Brad. Best of luck in the next round.
Thanks, guys.
Brad Treliving, Flames general manager. They're off to face off against the Anaheim Ducks. It is Jonas Hiller against his old squad. It is
you
Brian
would assume
Burke
that he's starting
before his. Well, the interesting thing about
he didn't finish.
No, I know.
The interesting thing about the dynamic between Jonas Hiller versus his old team is it's Jonas Hiller against his old team that he's upset at for not trading him at deadline last year for choosing to stick with him instead. Bizarre logic,
and
but
then,
nonetheless, it's there.
And then the whole rotating goalies that Bruce Boudreau 100%. Had last year in the playoffs. I still remember sending Bruce a text in the last week of the season. Is there any chance you might play John Gibson in the playoffs? And the answer back
sure
was,
enough.
You never know.
Yeah, and sure enough, there was the old Kitchener Ranger goaltender. All right, finish up the program with the Hockey Central 3 stars. That means cue the horns. I'll start it off with Connor McDavid. We're going to the CHL. John Shannon and Scott Morrison. 2 goals last night as the Erie Otters double up the Sioux Greyhounds. 32 points in 12 playoff games and 18 goals. And if you haven't seen the breakaway shorthanded goal that he scored going Forsberg/Nielsen style and you're watching on TV right there, it is one that you should stick in your hip pocket and remember for a long time because you'll be seeing that in Edmonton sooner than later, John Shannon.
By the way, here's your promo time.
Tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern, we have game 4. Between the Otters and the Sioux Greyhounds, and then Thursday we have Game 5. Thanks, John.
Sportsnet and
the NHL Network of the United States.
You guys are better at the janitorial stuff than I am. You should be hosting.
We get the helpers. We're the wingers.
That's all we do.
I'll sit there and say, bad pass. That's offside. Disallowed goal in Ottawa.
You talk about a guy who has had an up-and-down emotional season. We talked about Matt Stajan earlier in the day. Zach Parise scored 2 goals yesterday. To me, the clinching goal of the playoffs for them was the shorthanded first goal of the game. It made it 1-0. It was the emotional point of the game for the Wild, even though that wasn't the winning goal, but it was the key goal for sure. To me, Zach Parise is my star of the night, and when you consider, again, with family issues, his 100%. Father passing away earlier this season, and his father having such a big role at Shattuck St. Mary's, and the Islanders, and the North Stars, Zach Parise is my star.
And Team Canada, 1972 as well.
Bingo.
Absolutely, and we all remember the chasing down the referee.
Joseph Kampala, remember that.
My star, and we talked about the Montreal-Ottawa series and the goaltending just being brilliant, and you knew it was going to take that on last night, a greasy kind of goal, to win it, and Brendan Gallagher is my star. And it was just one of those plays where he just never gave up. He got tied up at the blue line, the stick and the skates, and he battles through that. And what's he do? Go to the net. Good things happen when you go to the net. And gets hit by the puck, but then bats it out of the air. So a nice play,
knew
it was going to take something like that to break the goose egg.
Any grievances about the disallowed goal? The one that has Ottawa Senators fans up in arms and outraged?
Heck happens. You know, it just happens. I mean, referees are human, too. And we've seen a few this season, but we've seen a lot more great calls than we have bad ones.
And from where the referee was standing, it looked like Price had the puck.
Yeah, it's the problem with the two-ref system is when do you blow your whistle? Whose responsibility is it? One guy doesn't see it, the other guy does. What do you do? Mm-hmm. It's a hard thing to manage.
All right, so on that we'll wrap up. By the way, on tomorrow's broadcast, Chuck Fletcher, general manager of the Minnesota Wild. And to your point, John, how do you not cheer for the Wild? When you look at what Zach Parise has gone through this year, when you look at what Ryan Suter has gone through as well. So Chuck Fletcher on the program tomorrow. On behalf of Scott Morrison and John Shannon, Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard signing off. Thanks for joining us on Hockey Central at noon. Back tomorrow.